Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Firstly, good evening, John.
And good evening, Ben, and greetings to everybody.
Greetings, fellow Earthlings, indeed, wherever you are in the whole universe. You're more than welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. You can catch us, of course, live on the internet and as a podcast too. I think we're having a bit of trouble uploading the podcasts, I believe, but there is somebody on the matter. Yes, we are live on dublincityfm.ie. You can email us. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's text or WhatsApp us on 087-179-1032. We're going to talk in a little bit about the full, super, blue
moon
in the moment.
Yeah.
But maybe, shall we start with the planets first?
Just before we get into that, the space station, it arrives back into our skies in a fortnight's time, September the 14th until October the 3rd. So looking forward to that again. It seems like ages since it was here last.
Well, if you're a very early morning riser, you can see it tomorrow if you're up at about just after 4:30. Not too many of us up at that hour, but 4:36 a.m. tomorrow morning if you're up.
Was it a big high pass or a low pass?
No, that's a pretty good one. Pretty high. Mm. 50-60 degrees, I'm not sure exactly. And pretty bright. Magnitude -3.7, I believe. You can get the times and all that details from your location on a website, heavensabove.com. That's heavens-above.com. It'll just ask you where you are. Just plug in the name of your town or city and, or if you know the coordinates, but it's easy to, and then you can press the link for the ISS. It'll show you where it is exactly at that moment and also when it will be visible from your location.
Isn't it remarkable, planet-wise, how things change over a set number of months, say, the last 4 or 5 months? Mercury and Mars have disappeared. They're now lost in the glow of sunset, so we don't get a chance to see them. A few months back we did. They were way high in the sky as well. Venus, it's pretty good at the moment. It's about magnitude -4.6, which is bright, and it's fast emerging low in brightening dawn. So look for it just above the horizon, due east. Yep, that makes sense. And it gets higher and easier every day. So as we're getting closer to December, which is not that far away either, we will do that. So even in low magnification, Venus is showing again a thin crescent, but it's still very bright. And it will get thicker and smaller in the coming weeks as it climbs higher in the dawn. And it's the reverse of how it grew thinner and larger while heading down into the sunset in July. So that's just a reminder again how much things change during the months, during the year as well. Jupiter -2.6. It rises just about an hour after full dark. I don't know if I've seen that just... When is full dark? Full dark is getting earlier, by the way.
I'll give you those times in a moment, yes.
Yeah, so watch for it to come up low in the east-northeast. Jupiter shines highest in the south just before the beginning of dawn, so it rises, and just before it gets bright, it's pretty high in the sky. Saturn +0.4, it's quite dim. It rises at sunset. It's at opposition this week, which was the exact date was August the 26th, and in late twilight you'll find Saturn glowing as the brightest thing low in the east-southeast. So it's pretty good for telescopic observing by 11 p.m. And Uranus +5.7. It's nice and high by midnight, about 7 degrees east of Jupiter, if you want to go rummaging around the skies for Uranus and Neptune, magnitude 7.8, that's plus 7.8, and it's at the Aquarius-Pisces border, and it's fairly high by late evening, 23 degrees east of Saturn. So they're pretty close to two good planets if you want to have a, as I say, a little wander around the skies just to see if you can spot those two. So that is pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Actually, John, I did see Jupiter last week.
Did you?
I was on the east coast of England over Whitby Way, mm-hmm. and just happened to look out east. I actually was looking up, saying, I was trying to get my bearings. It was dark, obviously, and saying, well, which way is north and which way is south? Because I like to know. And so I said, oh, there's the plough. And, you know, yourself have to find the North Star from there, follow the last two stars and the pot, and follow imaginary line through them and carry it on. That way's north. And so, oh, there's east. And then in the east, it was a lovely clear night, and it was about an hour or so after sunset. Yeah, saw Jupiter, and it was, as I said, on the east coast. So over the very little disturbance, a nice clear sky, not much light pollution, because it was right on the coast, more or less. And nice. It stood out. It was impossible to miss, really.
Yeah, that's good.
Speaking of Saturn, there is an effect known as, I haven't heard it before, actually, the Seeliger effect, named after a guy called Hugo von Seeliger, who discovered this in 1887. And this is where the rings appear, the rings of Saturn appear brighter than normal. And this Seeliger effect is caused by solid ring particles backscattering light, that's the sunlight, of course, to us when the sun is almost directly behind us. And sometimes we see on the dusty surfaces of the moon and Mars, they also display this opposition effect, but Saturn's clouds don't. And in the case, as I say, of Saturn, this is called the Seeliger effect. So it's a time when you see the rings, when Saturn is at opposition, where the rings appear brighter than normally, and in fact brighter than the globe, the planet itself.
It's remarkable to think also that the rings are maybe 10 metres deep all around the planet, even thinner in points, so about 36 foot deep.
That's all, yeah.
That's all it is, but they stretch out for hundreds of
thousands of miles. Very, very thin.
Yeah, yeah. They're all out there, all the ice crystals and lumps of ice crashing against each other continuously and reflecting the sun's light back to us. Now, we've got to really talk about the blue moon, supermoon, and full moon
rolled into one.
Yes, indeed.
Officially, it's on Thursday, the 31st at 2:35 a.m. to be precise, but a few days either side of that, you will see the full moon, and it's called a supermoon because it will be bigger than the normal full moon, and that's because the moon, as we know, goes around the Earth, but it's not a perfectly circular orbit, it's elliptical, slightly elliptical. It comes in as close as about 28 Earth diameters and out to about 34, I think. So, of course, naturally, when it's a bit closer, it'll appear a bit bigger.
Yep.
And therefore brighter. So, and again, as you know, when the full moon is rising, or any moon is rising, it always appears, doesn't just that optical illusion of it. When it's near the horizon, it appears bigger. So, the best time to look for this blue super, we'll get to the blue part in a moment. This full supermoon is early in the, as the sun is setting.
Yeah.
Because that's when the full moon rises, when the sun is setting. And so look low to the east, preferably a clear sky and not too much in the way, and you will see a bigger and brighter than normal full moon. And now, it's also called a blue moon, and perhaps you can tell us a little bit why that is.
We're right bang in the middle of an extremely rare coincidence of a blue moon and supermoon to give once in a 14-year super blue moon. So, first of all, we'll explain what a supermoon is. It's the moon's distance from Earth can vary by 15%, which causes the change in brightness, to about 30% when a full moon happens around the time that the moon is closest to our little planet here, and this is called a supermoon. So usually there are about three supermoons every year, which is about right. The blue moon, for those of you who don't know what a blue moon is, when the moon is full twice in one month. And this is one of the unique occasions, and roughly once every two or three years, there can be two full moons in one calendar month, which we had one just on the 1st of August, and we're right bang in the middle of it. It's very hard to tell whether it's full tonight, tomorrow night, or the next night, so it doesn't really matter. So you have three good chances to see this.
Well, you won't notice the difference with the naked eye.
No,
for sure.
And then the super blue moon is to have a blue moon occur at the same time that the full moon is a super moon is exceedingly rare. It's very hard to explain and grab a hold of that, really, isn't it? It hasn't happened since 2009. Do you remember that one?
No,
not particularly, and it's not going to happen again until 2037, so we're right bang in the middle of that as well in 2023. So we've had to wait 14 years for the last super blue moon, and we'll have to wait another 14 years for the next super blue moon. So I hope it's clear tonight. I'm not sure what it's doing.
Or over the next, certainly over the next couple of nights.
Yeah,
we've
tonight, tomorrow night, and the next night.
And Friday, really. You won't notice too much of a difference. No. If you get it clear patch, especially as the moon is rising, as I say.
Yep.
That would be super.
Yeah. So, mathematics, as there are 12 full moons every year, that means we have, there's been about 168 full moons to give one super blue moon. You got to get your maths head on this, and then this is how rare super blue moons are, and this is why we want many people on our little planet here, a little planet Ireland, to go out and have a little look to see if we can do this. Now, hopefully the nights in the next few nights will be very clear, so we just keep taking photographs, and just I'd love to see on our text line an odd photograph coming through, so we'll see what happens there. So blue moon, it's when it happens again, it's twice in one month, for those of you who don't know exactly what a blue moon is, and the super blue moon is because it's very, very close. Well, reasonably close, not too close.
thank you, John, for that. Yeah. Just sticking with the moon at the moment. It is about to rise, actually, very shortly from our vantage point here in Dublin. It's due to rise at 8:20, which is less than 10 minutes away. Now, it might be a while before you see it, depending on your vantage point and what's... Well, of course, the clouds are what's in the way of your horizon. If you have a good, clear horizon without any buildings or trees or mountains in the way, you should see it not long after that. And it will be, it's currently 91% phase waxing gibbous, obviously, as we head towards the full moon on Thursday. And when it crosses when it passes the zenith, or is due south of us, just after midnight, half an hour after midnight tonight, it'll be at 98%. So you won't notice the difference between the 98% really full moon and the 100% full moon. Certainly the naked eye won't spot the difference. And then it will set tomorrow morning, the early hours, just before 5 a.m, when it'll be up to 98.7% phase, and it will rise again 14 hours later tomorrow evening at 8:37, when it'll be 99.8% full. And as I say, we'll get to the full super blue moon on Thursday the 31st at 2:30 in the morning, to be precise. So it's also the closest full moon of 2023. Not surprisingly that it's considering it's a super moon, although I think there are four super moons this year, but this is the biggest and closest one of 2023. It emerged 357,340 kilometers away from Earth. But the sun, let's talk about the sun, that rises tomorrow at 6:38 a.m., 12 minutes later than a week ago, crosses the meridian in Dublin at 1:25 p.m., 2 minutes earlier than a week ago, and the sun sets, would you believe it, at 19 minutes past 8 tomorrow evening, all 17 minutes earlier than a week ago, And from then until just before 9 o'clock, we'll have civil twilight, and then we'll have nautical twilight at 9:42. That's 20 minutes earlier than a week ago. And from then until just at 10:30, or 25 to 11, we'll have astronomical twilight. And after that time, we'll have astronomical night. What does that mean? It means we have 20 minutes less daylight than a week ago, and tomorrow another 4 minutes and 3 seconds less daylight than today, when it'll be 13 hours and 49 minutes between sunrise and sunset. And John, I was here, wasn't here last week or the week before, so it's, don't tell me now, 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. 3 weeks since I was here, and I was just looking at the sunset time 3 weeks ago. It was one whole hour, more or less, one whole hour later.
Yeah,
the sunset was 3 weeks ago when I was last here.
It's a little bit more noticeable now. When we finish here and way, sort of way our way home, it's certainly starting to get dark as well. The news is, Ben, we're going to need a bigger telescope. We have everything out there at the moment. We have the James Webb Telescope, which is doing a great job out there on the infrared scale of the really long wavelengths as well. So it's not quite big enough. The Ukrainian Radio Telescope, UTR-2, it's the world's largest low-frequency radio telescope at a decameter in the wavelength band. It consists of a T-shaped array of 2040 broadband cage dipole day 10 antennas. And it looks like party crackers for Christmas. That's what that looks like. Of course, we're not forgetting the LOFAR radio telescope in Burr. I don't know. Have you seen that one? It's sort of on the ground.
Is it the radio? I haven't. But my plan is to see it on the 16th of September. Yeah. The Irish Astronomical Society are organising a trip down to Burr to see the old Leviathan. Telescope, what's left of it, Lord Ross's telescope, which was at one stage, for 50 years, it was the largest telescope in the world. And around the back now, they have around the back the LOFAR radio telescope. So hope to get a peek at that too.
It'll be nice.
It's just like bits of metal stuck in the ground, lots of them.
Like a lot of white solar panels pointing up towards the sky, low to the ground. And it's in Burr Castle in County Offaly, of course, so we're not forgetting that. So we do a lot of things here in Ireland for astronomy. And not forgetting that we have a plan. When we say we have a plan, somebody has a plan for the lunar crater, a crater radio telescope in one of the big craters on the far side of the moon. So they've picked out this wire mesh contraption thing that's going to hang into the middle of a crater. It's a big crater too. And they call it the Lunar Crater Radio Telescope. That's the first I've seen of it. Its diameter is 3 to 5 kilometers in diameter. So who's going to set that up? I don't know. It's going to be a while, I would imagine. But that's on the plan for the future. And it's it doesn't tell us which crater it is. I'm sure we will know very shortly which one it is, but it's a monster. And I have an actual photograph from one of the spacecraft to show this as well. So there we are. So in order to see the wavelengths, the longer wavelengths down in the infrared spectrum, we need a bigger telescope to help us see back in time. So just for an example, a 10-meter wavelength is 30 megahertz, if you're into megahertz and things, up to 60 meters, which is 5 megahertz. And we're looking to get even lower than that, which are big, long. It's like having a big wave out in the middle of the Atlantic, you know, a huge thing. So this is why we need to see these. So it's going to be interesting to watch these sort of evolve over the next coming years. But I'm really interested in that lunar crater one. That's brilliant. It's one of these that's, remember the one that was damaged in the, where is it, in the forest that fell? And this is going to be one of these suspended mesh ones. Now, you're not going to be able to dance on it, like James Bond.
I was waiting for James Bond to come into this.
So it's not going to happen. It doesn't need the strength of back down here on Earth as well. So that's be interesting to see.
Thank you, John. You're listening to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. Love to hear from you. Thanks to Alan for getting in touch. Thank you for the welcome back. And he says it's nippy out there. I'll have to take your word for it. It's not too nippy here in Dublin. I think you're in the Kildare region, if memory serves me correctly. Yes. What about, actually, we'll talk the big, one of the big, there was a few big stories of the week, of course. The success of the Chinese mission. But before that, we'll talk a little bit about the International Space Station, where there are currently 11.
This is remarkable.
Astronauts on board, which is unusual. It's not the first time, but it is quite rare. And what's even rarer or more unusual about this is that of those 11 astronauts, they come from 5 different countries.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have the names of
where they're
from?
US, that's the astronauts. We have Denmark, Japan, and Russia. Many is that? 1, 2, 3, 4. Or there's someone. India as well, I think, is in there. So that's interesting. But it's not very often that we get 11 crewmates from 5 different countries. And
UAE, the United Arab.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, that's it. I just spotted it just as you did.
And Alan reminds us of one woman amongst the 11, which is fairly low ratio. It's not uncommon for there to be more than one woman, female at a time.
Yeah, so how long are they going to be up there? That's the question, because I think they'll have an air rationing. You hold your breath for 5 seconds.
Well, I don't think that helps save.
They have enough up there. I would imagine that they do at this stage. So.
The last four? They blasted off on Saturday, and 30 hours later, they docked with the International Space Station. Yeah, there was four of them there. And normally those missions are for 6 months or so.
Yeah. It's a big station now. They keep adding bits to it, and they're going to bring that back down in the 2030s at some stage, I think. But will they do it or not? We don't know. They have a habit of keeping it up there as long as we can. So we'll just see what happens. So there are 11 astronauts, cosmonauts, and others up there at the moment, all doing the little experiments.
Yes, and yes, well, let's talk about just the Indians. Well, great. Congratulations to the Indian Space Organization. They landed. Sometimes you see in mainstream media, they talk about landing at the South Pole. Well, they didn't quite, well, close, but not that they intended to land exactly at the South Pole, but they did.
They did
land quite near to it.
Yeah, it would be similar to the top of Iceland up to the North Pole. It's at 69.37 degrees and 32 degrees east. So that's where it is, 69.37 to be exact, by 32.35 if you have a map of the moon. But you won't have the backside of the moon, so you won't be able to see that. But that's exactly where its landing site is.
And I think most maps of the moon now have those parallel lines. So you have a look at 70 degrees in, south. And if you look at a map of planet Earth, 70 degrees south, it cuts through that Antarctic peninsula. It doesn't go, I mean, it's very far south and quite cold, much further south than, say, the bottom of, what's that, you know, Tierra del Fuego, Argentina, Chile,
yeah.
And further, much further south than South Georgia or the Falklands. But
well, there's even a near, tourist, down near the tourist shop. Brilliant.
Yes, that part of the peninsula that comes out of the Antarctic, where near Elephant Island, if you're familiar with the geography of the Antarctic.
But, yeah, there are some nice cruises that will get you down there, and I know somebody's on the way down there at the moment. On his own. Yep, he's one not too far from home, and this is the thing that he likes to do. So he's going on a South Pole expedition type thing. Well, he's not going to get right down there, but he certainly is down to the tip of Argentina, etc. And this landing site, going back to where we were with the Indian spacecraft, it's close to a crater called Manzinus U. So just keep a note of that, and that'll give you the area of where the spacecraft landed. Now, just a week later, or 2 weeks later, in fact, days after becoming the first nation to land a craft near the moon's largely unexplored South Pole, India Space Agency said just yesterday on Monday, it will launch a satellite to survey the sun as well. So they're really going for this. And the launch of Aditya, I have to get used to all these names, L1, it's the first space-based Indian observatory to study the sun, and is scheduled for September the 2nd. So they'll be working on this quietly in the background. They're letting us know, and it'll get to about 1.5 million kilometers from Earth, providing the craft with continuous clear view of the sun. So just remember, it's hot out there. And this will provide a greater advantage of observing the solar activities and its effect on space weather in real time. Now, this is something that's, we're obsessed with weather, whether it's back here on Earth or solar weather, as it's prone to, because we have so many satellites floating around the atmosphere. And it sort of knocks out every now and again a few wavelengths here and there, which makes things go quiet in the electronic front for a while. So keep an eye on that too.
And of course, don't forget, India have also, back in 2014, they became the first Asian nation to put a craft into orbit around Mars. And they're planning, apparently, to launch a 3-day crewed mission into Earth orbit next year. So they're really racing ahead, and they're also planning a joint mission with Japan to send another probe to Mars, or to the moon, I should say, by the year 2025, and an orbital mission to Venus within the next 2 years. And they seem to be doing it too at a cut price. It was a relatively cheap mission. Don't know the exact cost, but compared to, say, the NASA and the European ones, and they are very much cut price. Do we have time? I wanted to do so much more.
I know, it's incredible. Japan has postponed its Moon Sniper launch for the third time. Now, what the Moon Sniper means, it's going to land a little probe of some sort within a kilometre of the area that they want to land, whereas a normal would be 3 to 5 kilometres of a landing point. So they use the word Moon Sniper to get it within a kilometre of where they exactly wanted to be, so that's going to do that. So I will go into that a little bit more in detail next week.
Okay, and they said the current launch window expires on September 15th, so will they get it off by then? Who knows? I did want to go into the dark spot on Neptune and about a giant black hole that destroyed a massive star, just ripped it to shreds. A star much bigger than their own sun. But unfortunately, we ran out of time yet again. Thank you, John, for that. And don't forget, lovely people out there, you can contact us. Drop us an email. astronomy@dublincityfm.ie is the email address. And thanks too to James Sweeney and Conor Lennon. They put the program up as a podcast also on a link. There's a link on astronomy.ie there. I know we're having a little bit of trouble with the podcast here, but somebody is looking into it, I believe. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, for this edition of The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China, 9 o'clock. It's Bren Leinart with Threads. And 11 p.m., we'll have Nigel Wood with Ear to the Globe. And at midnight until 2 a.m., it's After Hours with Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening. Say goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.